This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 2986 for Monday, the 13th of January 2020. Today's show is entitled Only Key Updated and is part of the series Privacy and Security. It is the 40th anniversary show of Operator and is about 23 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Only Key, more like you better have two keys. Quote dash.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm your host, Operator. I spent the past 40 minutes or so futzing around with the Only Key. So this is about a hardware-based key or password manager or authentication device. So I'm going to go over it. I've gone over it before. I think I did a video along with audio about how to set them up kind of properly and some caveats there. But I just wanted to add some more caveats because they just had an update and some tooling and whatever. So it's always been a little bit struggling to use this device. It's user-friendly, but at the same time, it can be complex to understand the layers and how it works. So it's easy to use, but kind of hard to understand, if that makes any sense. So what they added with the new features... So some of the features basically are, it has it's a little key fob you wear, and I don't know if you've heard of YubiKey or any of those like that. It's the same type of thing. It's a teensy sort of device, and it has six buttons on it that you can program up to, I think, 12, and then I think can add an additional double that, because you can have a second profile that's a fake profile, I guess, or whatever. So it has plausible deniability features in it, and it also has support for like a bunch of 2FAs like Google and OTA and something else, the Only Key or YubiKey stuff. You can put keys in there, and then those keys can sync up to accounts. So for example, if you're doing something that's like Microsoft, they don't natively support Microsoft's 2FA, but Microsoft supports Google, so you can pipe Google's 2FA into Microsoft, and then when you authenticate 2FA to Microsoft, it essentially authenticates with Google, which essentially talks to your YubiKey, which essentially is your single sort of single factor, basically. So that's how crazy you can get with it. So any 2FA device has like usually either a Google, right, or a Duo, or like a whatever, or more of a OTP provider. So anyways, that's the features. There's a bunch of other features in there. You can store keys in it. You can store all kinds of crazy stuff. You can do a bunch of other things. It's like a single, you know, authentication device is the idea. They're trying to pair up with other applications and whatever. So outside of the defaults, what you get is normally people have like a URL, a username and a password. You can also set up, what I had to do is I set up, different things for when I change my password. So if I had to repeat my password in old and new, I can have a copy sort of essentially of my old and new password. So when I'm changing my password, I have those keys set up. What I would say is if you do get it, buy one. If you don't like it, give it away. If you do like it, you're going to want to purchase another one, because basically it's your two-factor authentication. So if you lose it, forget it at the house, and you receipt to try to log in, you're not going to be able to log in because you don't know any of your passwords. So it's a something you have, and if you don't have it, obviously, you can't log in. So what I would suggest is, what I've had to do is, when I got it, I thought it was cool, use it for a few days, and then I realized, hey, if I forget this, if I leave it in my, you know, one computer and put it in another, especially if you're taking it from one computer to the other, you're going to want to make sure that that you keep it on you, whatever. It does have, they give you the option to buy, it's fairly expensive actually, to buy the little trinket that hooks to like a badge. I would suggest finding one of those on cheap online. They charge like $5 for it or something ridiculous. It's really expensive, but it's nice, hasn't come apart. It's not cheap, it's sturdy. So chances are, my child or somebody was tearing, pulling on the UV key, and the lanyard broke before any of the UV key stuff broke. So I've had it for 2 or 3 years now. I like it, but I have painted myself into a corner twice now. So I'll kind of go over what I did and how I did it. If you have one of the original ones with the older firmware, it's like beta 6, I think, you have to do a TNC method to patch it. So you get this patch, you have to figure out which one you have. So there's different versions. So there's at least two different versions. You figure out which one you want. And then there's also like an international, which has the 2FA, or has the, I think it has the plausible deniability stuff in it. I'm not really sure what the two differences are, but I think it's an additional plausible deniability or an additional profile, or maybe they've combined those two. I don't know. But anyways, you just have to be very cautious of what firmware, obviously, you push these things, or you might end up kind of half breaking it. You have to kind of start over. And that's why it's good to have two. If you do any firmware updates, just have a backup of your passwords temporarily somewhere, just in case you break the thing and you can't log into anything anymore because you've bricked your only authentication device. So the first time I did it, you have pinouts on there and you short out two pins, and, or you press a button on two corners of the thing, and then you flash the firmware with TNC. If you've ever done any TNC stuff, firmware flashing, it's quick, fast. Didn't have any issues with that. But I did try to make sure that I did it the right way, and it did take me a while to read the documentation to make sure I was doing it the right way, because I didn't want to break it or anything like that. And I don't think there's a possibility that that could happen. You can always flash an older firmware to it, I feel like. I don't know if you can actually break the things, but in my experience, it's always better to take extra time when you're doing firmware stuff and not have to go back and redo the whole thing, which I've had to do. So that's the legacy updates. Now, with the newer updates, it used to be key-based, so you had to have a key, an RSA key. It's just a certificate, basically. But now you can have a passphrase, and that passphrase is set up to I think, just be built into the backup itself. So the backup itself, I think, actually has the passphrase that goes with it in it. So instead of having to have a key with a passphrase that's standard, you know, whatever, it's built into the device. So all you have to do is remember your, you know, master password, right? And you don't have to have a key file. Now you can do that. I think you can do one or the other. I don't think you can do both. But yeah, the idea is that if you don't want to worry about the key thing and having a key file and having to upload that or whatever, you can just remember a master password that's long and complex. It's a minimum of like 25 characters. So I had to reach to get to that point because I have several key passphrases that are in my head, and I had to come up with a long one for this one. But anyways, now there's the passphrase option to keep to do your backups and stuff. What I will say is that all the other backups I have are now worthless, and I don't think you can restore anything. So what happened is that there's a beta 8 out now, and I'll put links in the show notes to the videos and stuff in the builds. But there's a beta 8 now that's not, I guess, not pushed out or whatever. It came out in October. And they posted some more videos too. So I just happenstance to be like, hey, let me check and see if there's an update for my firmware. One of the features I'll say, let me go back to my notes here, is I talked about the caveats and difference between the firmwares. I think by default it puts you on 7 now, and then I guess eventually they're going to push out 8 to people as a whatever, or maybe my YubiKey plugin for Chrome is old or something, because there's a soft client, there's a thick client you can put on there to actually install it, and then there's a, you can just use a Chrome, so if you don't have local admin, you don't have to worry about installing anything, you can use a Chrome plugin, because it's just if I'm not mistaken, it's just Java. So what I did was today is I downloaded the international firmware, I think, and I updated with that, and I think it was okay. But then I tried to push a restore. I tried to back up and push that back up to the old one, and it got all confused or some vice versa. So ended up, there was stuff in my thing. So when I pressed the button, it would type stuff, but it wasn't the password that I was expecting. So it was either because of the wrong firmware or the wrong international or the wrong firmware got pushed on there, or I have the wrong backup or restore. I don't know what happened, but essentially if you have one working YubiKey, you can always just backup, you know, replace all your backups and whatever. Where you have a problem is if you don't know what version, firmware, or whatever your key goes with, then you need to, you know, figure it out and then reverse engineer it. So what I would say is that if in the future is bundle your firmware with your backups, just in case, you know, maybe even keep the old, all the firmwares that you used or patched to it. So just in case you have to restore an old password from an old firmware that's no longer available or whatever, there won't be any confusion as to what firmware you use when you backed it up. So, I would go as far as to say is to keep your backups with your firmware that's currently on there in the right version, so you don't really have to worry about it. Obviously, don't figure it to your passphrase is what I ended up doing, but luckily, I had the old new password for Active Directory and a different, are assigned to a different key, and I hadn't ruined that one yet, and I accidentally wiped the wrong thing. So obviously, be careful. There's no prompts with this stuff. So if you hit the wipe key and you wipe out your, you know, Active Directory password or whatever, it's gone. You're done, unless you can restore it, which I couldn't do. And luckily, I remembered that one of the keys I had binded to the new password, which would have been the new password for AD. I kind of lucked out. So I have everything set on the two devices now. They're all set up. You can change the LED brightness. It's very bright. I think 8 by default. It's extremely bright by default. I might even just leave it on 1 for now and see how that works. In some instances, you know, you are outside, and I've actually had problems being able to tell whether or not, you know, the key I'm pressing, because it's under the device. So you basically have to cup your hand under the device to see if the LED is on or not. So I would actually, you know, give it a try with a lower brightness, because if you're walking around with it at night, it's really bright, like freaking bright. And you're walking past somebody, it'll get kind of half blinded. So it's a really bright LED in there. The other feature I'll say that they added is a quick setup guide, which basically dumps out all the information you need. Okay, here's your password, here's your key, here's your PIN, here's your alternate PIN, here's your passphrase to back it up. Print out this document and keep it somewhere physically safe, and you don't have to do anything, it just works. So that way all your backups have the same issue, you don't have to worry about any of that, setting it up or setting up any keys or it being complicated, because that's kind of the feature, we're kind of missing, because doing the keys and figuring out which firmware you had or whatever, it was kind of confusing. So I think this quick setup might help people that just want to make it go. So that way they can just print out this document, have their pins in there, and they have the alternate method where you can enter the pin and it won't actually save it to the screen. I think it just puts it in there and you have to remember your pin, obviously. So that's in those videos. What else will I say? You'll also want to get, because if you're in a corporate environment or wherever else, if you're doing something with your phone, guess what? You're going to want to authenticate through your phone too. And you don't necessarily want your core passwords or master passwords to be in something like a password safe like LastPass. So what you don't want to do is put your 2FA or your your only key passwords in your in any of your password managers or whatever. So the idea that is if your password manager gets popped, then and you have your only key or your, you know, 2FA token thing key stuck in there, then if somebody pops that, then they can get to your passwords for your only key physical device type of thing. So I'm keeping LastPass stuff separate than my only key. So that way, you know, my bank password is only on my brain and only on the key, and it's only on the other key and nowhere else. So that way, there's no confusion as to like getting prompts and password prompts and stuff for hosts and domains and things that I don't want to save anywhere except for a physical device. And if you're using like Android, every once in a while you're going to have to re-authenticate. And guess what? If you don't know your 52 character password, I think it's 56 characters max or something. If you don't know your 52 character password, then you're going to have to copy and paste it somewhere out of somewhere and then send it to yourself and then paste it in, which is obviously defeats the purpose of the whole thing. So, what you can get is a little fob that, it starts to come with newer phones now to transfer the USB-C to USB standard USB. So if you want to charge your phone through standard USB, you can do that. I think it's also designed for this specific case. So if you have a 2FA device, you can plug your little USB-C to male or to female USB, plug it into the bottom there, and then you plug in the UB key, or the only key, sorry, and put in your passphrase. The problem, at least on this phone and the phone previous, is that the LED doesn't work. And I guess it's because the voltage or whatever. I read something online. I assumed it wasn't working, but it's actually working, but the voltage or something about the voltage or whatever. So you just have to keep in mind that, you know, type in your PIN, wait a sec, few seconds, and then press your thing and it'll pop right up. I've also had issues with, I don't know if I mentioned the auto lock feature. So you can assign one of the keys. It has to be the primary. So I had to move some things around. But I assigned like the number 6 key to lock the workstation, window key L, and then basically set the only key to to be rekeyed. So I don't know how you're supposed to do it before, but basically I had to take it with me. So I would walk off, unplug the key, and take it with me. Now you can just hit the lock key. It'll lock your workstation, and it will lock the only key too. So if you don't want to physically bring it with you, you can just use that. Let's see, what else? The Android issues I talked about. I was talking about the features. And there was one other thing I was going to bring up outside of the locking feature. There was another new feature. The keyboard speed. So it's always been around, but you can set the speed of the keyboard. It defaults to like 8 or something like that, 8 or 4, which is pretty slow. Now what you'll do, everything's first thing is there to do is put it on all the way to 10, which is almost instantaneous. Seems to work everywhere except for I had Symantec drive encryption on a system, and if it was not booted into the right thing or whatever, the keyboard speed would be too fast. So I will, like, when I disabled, I think I disabled UEFI or disabled something in the BIOS, like legacy support for USB or something like that, and it was able to pick it up after that, but I had issues with speed. So obviously, keep that in mind. If you've got things like RDP client, or if you're doing remote desktop over remote desktop, there's things like send key delays, and if you're ever into AutoHotKey and AutoIT scripts, there's things like send key delays and hold time values, meaning if you just type out a password extremely fast, that's not long enough sometimes for certain applications to pick up that you've actually registered and clicked that thing or typed that key. So I don't even know if they have like a send key delay setting for the thing that tells you how long to hold the key down, how many milliseconds to hold the key down before it actually lifts up that key as a key up value. There's DLL stuff you can do, like send key event stuff for AutoHotKey, and you can do it straight up in Windows. Anyways, But you'll find issues where your RGB keyed into a box, you hit the thing, it goes bleh, and either the keys are messed up somehow because the case gets screwed up. I don't understand how or why it happens. The only thing I can assume is that the its typing is so quickly, it changes the case. So meaning that if my password has a uppercase in it or a special character, it's going to hit the special character and then stay in the lowercase, the uppercase for a while, the caps lock basically, the shift button, for too long. So it hasn't sent the key up from the shift before. So if you're, it's hard to explain, but basically it's keeping the caps lock or the shift key down too long, and your password ends up being a bunch of gobbledygook and it's not right. So keep in mind that there are, you know, some things that are limited, and you'll find that when you're working with this stuff, the more you use it, the more weird things you'll find out about it that are some kind of limitations, not to, YubiKeys, fail design. It's just the way, you know, people and applications interpret keys. And when you start going faster than humans can type, things get weird. So I've had issues with RDP, and I've had to do silly stuff like have a auto hotkey script that would pick up what I typed in the box, and then what I typed in the box would be actually sent through auto hotkey and then sent out to, you know, the screen buffer, the send key buffer through auto hotkey, so that it would type the right password. That's pretty much it. As far as payloads, I thought initially I could make it a teensy or a USB ducky, but you can only put basically up to, it's like 52 bytes or more, 52 characters, and then another 52, and then another 52. So I think that's about all you get, which is roughly, like 150 characters. That's not enough for really any kind of payload. Especially like an obfuscated payload through like the PowerShell or something. That's pretty much it. I like it. I use it. You know, there's weird use cases. Like, for example, if someone wants you to type in your password into something that doesn't allow you to easily type in your password, it's very painful. And that's where that need or want is to take it and just throw it up into LastPass, and that kind of defeats the purpose. So don't try not to do that. So, for example, some kind of wireless device with a touchscreen. I'm like, I'm not going to put in a 52-character password with, like, a tiny little LCD on, like, some dumb printer or something. Like, I'm not going to... First, I don't trust that device to hold my password safely anyways, or the authentication for that password anyways. Probably passing it over plain text somewhere anyways. Secondly, it's you know, pain in the butt to type all that in. So anyways, I hope that helps somebody out. I've gotten YubiKeys before and given them away. Only keys, they're run about $40, I think. And then when it's all said and done, they're like $45 or something. And then you buy two of them, so you're spending $100 on key fobs. But, you know, having a nice long password that no one can hack. And funny, I say that, I actually used a passphrase at a previous employer, and a coworker was actually able to crack it. So, keep in mind, a passphrase is a pseudo-random passphrase. It's not something that's a quote or a string of known, characters. So you don't want to use, obviously you don't want to use things from a book, but you know, you think that it's random enough, but obviously it's not random enough if it's something that's already been written or printed, and it's not, you know, random battery horse staple, you know, the XKCD joke. But anyways, hope that helps you guys out. If you have any questions about setup and stuff like that, I'll have the videos posted. But if you have any problems with it or whatever, need help setting it up, just let me know. I can help you guys out. But I like it. I bought one for my dad. I don't know if he's used it, but we'll see. Appreciate it. Take it easy.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.